How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents, or as the official title is, I Want to Go to Lithuania, or How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents. We've got the author of that book, and she can speak on her experiences, is Christina Conroy, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, and it sounds like, interesting, I'm in New York City, and it sounds like we have almost the same weather. That's kind of unusual and nice. Well, we've had a heat wave, but it's nice right now.
Well, that's right. That's what we expected this time of the year to enjoy this. Now, I looked at, you have a lot of letters after you, M-A-C-M-T-L-C-A-T, and I thought, oh, that's really, you know, intimidating, it seems. But it's certified music therapist and licensed creative arts therapist.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it just means I kind of went to school a lot. I kind of like to learn stuff. So I have a master's degree in music therapy from NYU, and then all arts therapists, dance therapists, drama therapists, art therapists can get the further degree, which is called licensed creative arts therapist.
Now how does this go into the elder care aspect of it? Tell me about that connection.
Okay, well, first one in the elder care aspect, well, when I was 27 years old, my 60-year-old mother died of cancer, leaving me with her elderly husband. He was 80. So I was 27 taking care of an 80-year-old. And I was actually a full-time performer at the time. I have an undergrad degree from Juilliard in voice, and I was touring, doing musical theater. And I had a really, really horrible few years learning how to care for my dad. And then after he passed, when I changed careers to be a music therapist, I was very interested in working with the elderly, and I became a gerontologist, and that's 25 years ago. So I've been working as a professional clinician all this time and really having a wonderful career. Some of it's really scary, some of it's really painful, really hard, and really funny and rewarding and great, great work.
You break these seniors down into four different categories. Can you identify those and tell us a little bit about each?
Absolutely. Well, if someone is caring, whether you're a professional caregiver like me or a family member, a daughter, a son, whatever, caring for someone, if your elderly dad or mom has a lot of interests, even if they're frail and they don't move too well anymore, if there's a lot of stuff that can keep them interested in having a good life, God bless, you're going to have a good time. But if your mom or dad is, as I call, one of my four dysfunctional parent types, you got your work cut out for you. Now, the first one I call stuck in a rut. Now, actually, well, this is the mom who only wants to get her hair done, play bingo, go to church, watch soap operas. That's it. She's happy. And actually, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. As long as she has enough money to do all that stuff, she's fine. But her son or daughter might say, my God, my mom, she's only 73 years old. She's got a whole life ahead of her, but she's so boring. What can I do to make her life more interesting? And I just say, relax a lot. If she's fine, you should be fine. But my other three can be a problem. My second dysfunctional parent is self-isolating. Now, this is the elder who likes being alone too much. Maybe their friends have passed away, the kids have grown up, they're retired, and they either can't work anymore because of illness, or because they just have forced retirement, whatever it is, and they're not happy. And they're sitting at home, and they are kind of depressed. They don't want to talk to anybody. Now, if this self-isolating parent seriously is clinically depressed, they need medical attention, and they need to be seeing a psychiatrist and possibly getting them on meds, which can help bring them back to themselves. Possibly they just need a reason to get up in the morning, and that's what my book is all about, How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents. It's bringing a life and a passion back to this person, maybe an old passion that they had they forgot about, or maybe even finding a new interest they didn't know they had. So that's those the first two, stuck in a rut and self-isolating parents. Now the third one, oh dear, dangerously independent. Now, this is what my dad became, dangerously independent. He was very frail. He couldn't move very well. He couldn't see very well, couldn't hear very well, but insisted he did not need any help around the house. And so I would kind of come in and clean up when I could, whatever. But the one day, I'll never forget it, I walked in and the back of his polyester jacket had melted because he had leaned against the stove.
A stove.
And it was, this is it, you know, the end. You have to have help. You cannot stay alone. You'll burn the house down and kill the neighbors as well as yourself, and this can't happen. Okay, so that's dangerously independent. And number four is the unreasonably demanding parent who wants you to do everything for them, wants you to do the cleaning and the shopping and the all this stuff. And so many of our caregivers, especially our family caregivers, are what we call the sandwich generation. They've got young kids at home. They're going to work. They have a husband or a wife they want to do stuff for. And suddenly, mom or dad needs a lot of help. And if this mom or dad who needs a lot of help is unreasonably demanding, not happy with the shopping, not happy with the laundry, this poor caregiver sandwiched in the middle needs help big time.
The book is called I Want to Go to Lithuania, or How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents. Tell me about that title. I guess there was an encounter that inspired it. Huh?
Absolutely, yes. I was working in a nursing home. I was the music therapist. And the one day I was bringing people to activities, and this little lady who was very disoriented and never participated in activities, she joined us. She walked onto the elevator with us. And so I said, Mary, it's lovely to see you. Do you want to go to the Bible study or do you want to play bingo? And she said, I want to go to Lithuania.
And what did you, what was your response to that?
I tried not to laugh out loud because it was just so crazy, but also so sweet. And she was, in her mind, serious. And, of course, I didn't know if she really wanted to go to Lithuania or thought she was in Lithuania, whatever it was. But she somehow had this idea of someplace nicer than a nursing home that she wanted to be in. So, I apologized. We couldn't go to Lithuania right then. You know, I took her back to her room. And it really got me thinking about how smart the brain is, that if you're in an unhappy place and there's nothing you can do about it, your brain is going to play a really pleasant trick and let you think you're in someplace nicer.
I thought maybe you could have learned a Lithuanian folk song that would have added to it.
I very often did. I very often learned ethnic folk songs. Yeah, certainly when I was working in the nursing home, as soon as a new patient would come in, I would grab whoever was with them, and it was usually a family member, to say, what's your dad's favorite song? And that was an immediate way for me to make a connection with this person. Because very often a person, even if they've got Alzheimer's or dementia and can't speak anymore, they will sing songs and they will remember rhymes and songs from their childhood. So I did indeed. I can say Dzień dobry, and in Polish I learned some Hungarian, some whatever was needed at the time to try to communicate with my patients in the nursing home.
You list this as a step-by-step manual for adults. What kind of process do you take us through in those steps a little bit?
Okay. Well, the first thing I take you through is understanding what kind of a parent you have, what kind of dysfunction or not. As I say, if your mom or dad is living down the street and maybe they need a little help with housekeeping, whatever, but they have interests, and they still like to go to the senior center, go to the movies, whatever, lovely. But if they have one of these four dysfunctional parent types, you kind of need to understand and to see, is your parent self-isolating or dangerously independent or unreasonably demanding or a combination of all three, which many are. Okay, so the second one is how do you understand your relationship to your parent? Now, if your parent was a great parent, if they were nurturing, if they were enthusiastic, if they helped you with your homework, if they you know, made you feel like you were important. Chances are, when the roles are reversed and you're the parent to your parent, that you're going to treat them the same way. However, most of us didn't have perfect parents like that. And maybe our parents were holding down a couple of jobs, and there were other kids in the house, and they were really busy, and you felt like you were neglected or even abused. When the tables are turned, you might not even be aware that you're treating your parent the way you perceived that your parent treated you. No, it might have been that your parent loved you dearly, but just didn't have the time to show you the love and nurturing that they wanted to. But that doesn't matter when you're a kid. Your perceptions are your perceptions. But as an adult, you can sit back, look, okay, well, how do I think he treated me? Why did he treat me that way? And how should I be treating him? Even if he was, you know, nasty and demanding, I don't have to be. I can still be kind and considerate. So that's the second thing to do. Figure out your relationship to your parent. And does your parent think that he is, strong and able to do everything, and you think he's not? And does he think you're strong and able to do everything when actually you've got 1,000 other responsibilities? Obviously, you're not going to leave your kid overnight in preschool so that you can go take care of your dad. But if he has bits of dementia and memory loss, he might not understand that. So lots of dynamics here that are not really hard to figure out, but people don't think to take the time to do it. And I've got exercises and games in my book. It's workbook style, actually. It's real short and easy to read. And this stuff that is kind of like a duh, why didn't I think of that? But going through these quick exercises and games, you can figure out a lot of this stuff without a lot of time and energy.
Is this something I should keep hidden from them, or should I share this book with them? I mean, am I using this as like a secret manual, or should they be a part of this process?
That's a really good question, and that would be up. That would depend on the caregiver. Okay. Now, the book is really cute. It's got really funny cartoons in it, and so I think a lot of if your parent is lucid and has a sense of humor, you could work on it together. You absolutely. You could sit down and look at the cartoons and have a laugh and actually discuss it together. If your parent obviously has some memory issues and couldn't quite understand it, then you're going to certainly not hide it from them, but it actually wouldn't help to get them involved.
Right. And if there's multiple siblings, how do you know who handles what or who's better to do what or who takes control? How does that usually work?
That is huge. That is absolutely huge. In my particular case, my mom died. My brother and I were stuck with my dad, who was 80 at the time. He died at 92. When he was about 85, my brother got married and moved to Phoenix, and I'm in New York with my dad. And that's generally how it happens. It's generally one sibling who takes on everything. And I run support groups, and I'm constantly encouraging the people in my groups to try to communicate with their siblings and get them to help as much as they can, because it's a terribly big responsibility for one person.
You have something in here about new hobbies reviving old passions. Tell me a little bit just about that.
Yeah, that's great. That I found out through trial and error and being in desperation when I was first working in the nursing home. I'll always remember this one guy who he was very crippled with arthritis, and he couldn't do anything for himself. He was wheelchair-bound. He couldn't feed himself, couldn't bathe himself. The only thing that works for Mr. Smith is his mouth. And he was nasty. He would scream and yell and verbally abuse the poor staffers who were doing everything for him. But he was really unhappy. Well, I took him into my music groups as much as I could. Now, when you're working in an institution, it's kind of interesting because you've got the physical therapists, the occupational therapists, the doctors, but basically all these people are making you more uncomfortable. I was the music therapist, so I was the fun therapist. I got to bring people into activities rooms and play music, and I'd pass out musical instruments, and we'd sing songs, and we'd play games. And so this one guy would come to programs, and little by little I kind of managed to get a relationship with him. And he told me his whole life he had lived alone. He said he never wanted to get married or had kids. That was his story anyway. But he loved living alone. He would go to work. He would come back home by himself, turn on the TV, have a beer, fall asleep. That was life. So here he was in a residential facility where he never had a moment of peace away from other people, and he couldn't do anything for himself. So makes sense he was not happy, but he was being kept alive, which is the point of residential facilities. But it was my job, I thought, to try to get some joy into this guy's life. So at any event, we're talking and whatever, and he said something, and I went, ding. 30 years he'd been working on his own in a welding shop with the radio playing. So he knew decades of bands and singers and music charts. So I got him to lead a musical reminiscing group. And we would wheel people into a big day room, and one of the nurse's aides would help out, and he would choose music, his favorite music from all the decades. They would play the songs, and the people would sit around and talk about their memories having to do with this song. Mm-hmm. And they loved it. It was became a very popular activity. He became suddenly the center of attention, which he'd never been in his life. So he had a passion that he didn't even know he had, and I'm not going to say it made him a nice guy, but it made him far easier to deal with, and he was far less abusive to the staff that was taking care of him. So they were all, you know, very grateful to me for having helped him out on this. So that's just one idea of how a passion that you don't even know you have can become a passion.
That's wonderful. It's one of those things you just, as you mentioned, you touch into that something, and the more you uncover, like an onion, the layers of a person, you can kind of get to something that really, really sticks with them. And
yeah, exactly. I like that. I like that onion simile. That's nice.
So again, the book is called
How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents. The prequel is How to Go to Lithuania, but it's listed. If you go to a bookstore, you can just ask for How to Have Fun with Your Aging Parents.